This is an Awakening Zone presentation, human empowerment radio and media for the 21st century and beyond.
Welcome to the D-Spot, the place where nighttime dreams, daytime desires, and your highest destiny come together. The D-Spot is brought to you live from the heart of enchanted Topanga Canyon, California, on the Awakening Zone, or Awakening Zone Radio, as they're now calling it, the international radio for network for empowered awakening. And I'm your host, Dr. Dream, Kelly Sullivan Walden. I'm the founder of Dream Life Coach Training and the author of the Amazon.com best-selling dream interpretation book, I Had the Strangest Dream, as well as the book Discover Your Inner Goddess Queen, an inspirational journey from drama queen to goddess queen. And if you would like to find out about how you can get support regarding dream interpretation or living the life of your dreams, you can call in the show today. The number to call is 714-364-4353. The number again is 714-364-4353. My website, by the way, is ihadthestrangestdream.com. ihadthestrangestdream.com. And if you want to get some of my free dream gifts valued at, God, I don't even know how much it's valued at, over $100. You can just go to my website in the upper right-hand corner, put in your email address and name, and download a bunch of free stuff. And on the website, you can also, there's a little widget there for my Facebook fan page. If you go to Kelly Sullivan Walden Dr. Dream, it's a big, long name to find on Facebook. If you just want to make it easy for yourself, go to ihadthestrangestdream.com, and you can find the widget right there on that website. Okay. I'm excited about my guest today. And, of course, FYI, before I even talk about my guest, you know that your dreams are always welcome, whether I have a guest on the show or we're just talking about dream interpretation. So if anyone has a burning question, a burning thought, a burning dream, a burning anything, don't hesitate to call in or join us in our live chat at awakeningzone.com. And you can talk to Celestial B in the meantime. He's my virtual co-host. And Telepath John is on as well. He's my co-host. And I'd say Rabbi Steve is my co-host. You guys are so awesome. And welcome everyone else who's joined us in the chat room. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about my guest today. This is kind of an unusual guest for my show. Normally, the guests that I have some kind of a specific dream interest or expertise or spiritual teaching of some kind that is in the mind-body-spirit kind of arena. And this guest does. He is all of those things. He has dreams. He has visions. He's an expert in his field, and he's very magically, deliciously spiritual. And I've known him, God, I've probably known him for 20 years on and off. It just flies by so fast, like one click. He is a photographer. He is I'm just going to call him a magically, spiritually delicious photographer. His name is Carl Stedna, multifaceted photographer, videographer, author, lecturer, and spiritual counselor. Carl's intimate portraits of influential people, ranging from Sir Paul McCartney to the Dalai Lama, are published and known worldwide. The primary theme that weaves its way through Stedna's lectures, interviews, and published works is that life is a sacred journey to be cherished and embraced, awakening to the splendor that lies in life's seemingly ordinary moments. So Carl's one of the great talents of our time. He's able to capture the soul's essence in the blink of an eye, in a click. So in his book, his new book is called Click, choosing life one frame at a time. Oh, that's so interesting. So in his book, Carl pours a lifetime of brilliance into one beautiful and inspired book, allowing us to get a special glimpse into the heart and mind of the man behind the camera lens. And that quote was given by Catherine Woodward Thomas, founder and director of Calling in the One. So without further ado, Carl Studna, welcome to the D-Spot.
Oh, it's so great to be with you, Kelly. Yeah, we've known each other for probably about 20 years, which is pretty amazing, considering that we're only in our late 20s.
I know, that's so weird. And that's just in this lifetime. It's so bizarre. And the picture, my favorite picture, and I've had my fair share of photo shoots, but I would say my favorite pictures that I've ever taken were the ones I took with you. And I think I'm due for a new shot. I just haven't found any that I like better, so I keep using that shot over and over.
Yeah, I know. When you got a great shot, it's hard to let it go.
I know. It's so funny. Before we shot, I knew my new book was coming out. Back then it was new. Now it's not new. It's the book I Had the Strangest Dream. It's been out for a number of years, at least 4 years now, 5 years maybe. But I was walking through Agape's bookstore, and I was looking, and I was noticing all these author photos that I really loved. I saw a picture of Jamie Lula on his CD cover, and it was like, oh, wow. And I think there was a picture of Marianne Williamson. There was a picture of the Reverend Michael. And there's probably five other pictures that I looked at, and I was like, oh, I want to see who the photo credit belongs to, because maybe I can find that photographer. They were all by you. All of those pictures by you. And I thought, oh, my God, how does he do this? And there's one thing, I mean, such a variety of different people, but one thing that all the pictures had in common was that there truly was this quality of them jumping out of the picture and into your heart. And that's not an easy thing to do when there's lights and so many things that are stifling, but you have the ability to bring out a person's soul and capture it, which is quite an art. So in a nutshell, can you give us a secret about how you do that? Is it something that other people can learn?
Well, you know, the subtitle of the book, Choosing Love One Frame at a Time, really is the essence. When I was coming up with the title, or the subtitle, you know, I was thinking, well, what really is the kernel, the essence of what brings out the trust and the truth and the light and the love and the essence in people.
Yeah.
And I believe it really just comes down to the simplicity, but it's not necessarily simple, of choosing love in each moment. And so to cultivate that place of being, to cultivate a loving, trusting atmosphere even before somebody comes, and then when they enter into the space, and then to be loved, to be with someone in ways where they just can feel like they can let their guard down, can let down all of the old judgments, perhaps the old thoughts that they have, which I think are misconceptions of who they think that they are, you know, all of the things that I think stop us from fully resting and relaxing and being completely present and open and relaxed. So it's just inviting people into that space and reassuring them in various ways that this is a time, this is a place, it's a sacred time. I might not use those words, but that's the way of being, where they can just let go, and then humor can be a part of it too. Breathing, there's many different kinds of approaches to bring people into that place of let go.
Mm. Beautifully expressed. It's such an interesting metaphor, and even not even a metaphor. I know that a lot of the Native Americans believe that if you take a picture, the picture captures your soul, which is why so many of them don't want their pictures taken, because they feel like a part of their soul will be taken. And so first, let's just go there. What's your response to that? Because you do capture people's souls. What do you do with them?
Yeah. which is why I prefer not to use the word capture or
right.
or take, because both of those have the connotations of like you're taking something from somebody. And
so what do you call
and
it?
I look at it and I look at from the perspective of revealing, of just simply showing the truth of what is present. So and the camera does that. It's very unbiased, and it will show whatever's present in every moment. So if you are resting in one moment in a place of let go and love and trust and who you are and your essence and your message is coming through, then you'll see that in the person's eyes, you'll see it in their smile or just in the relaxedness of their face. You'll feel it in their presence. And then the next moment, you know, if they're feeling at all tense because of some sort of judgment or self-consciousness, then you see it. Their eyes might be glazed, their mouth can be tight, their energy is constricted. So the camera is very unbiased in that way, and it just reveals whatever's present. So my role, my opportunity is to be with people in a way that invites people to just let go in every moment, into the let go, into the safeness, into the trust, so that who we really are can just come through and let go of any of those old past conditioning that's just simply not the truth of who we are.
I think it's such an interesting way to frame things, pun intended, ba-dum-bum, that I often use the metaphor that if you look at one snapshot of a moment in time, you could create a judgment about a whole scenario. Like if you catch a person having a bad day, you took a picture of that, you could say, wow, this is characteristic of the person's entire life and this is all that they are. But if you take the picture of the next moment or the next moment, then it could change. Your whole frame is different based on a moment in time, and I'm always using that metaphor. Well, that was just one snapshot in time. But if you look at another snapshot or look at the composite of all the snapshots and put it together, you get an actual sense of the person's soul. Anyway, so this is kind of a fun metaphor that I like to use just to kind of reframe things. I mean, it's so much in life is about changing the paradigm, changing the frame around the way we see things, the way we see ourselves. I know that the thing that seems like a cognitive dissonance, and I love cognitive dissonances. It's Carlos Castaneda and my friend Felix Wolf kind of brought those to my attention. I look for them and I love them. And it seems like you're talking about not capturing people's souls, but revealing their souls, shining a light on their souls in a photo shoot environment. And yet, we all have egos. There's not a human alive that doesn't have one, except maybe the Dalai Lama, maybe. Maybe. But in order to take a picture, it's like the ego shows up for the photo shoot, because it's about getting looked at and being seen. And
yes.
I mean, so there is an interesting dance there, because in order for the picture to be really great, the pictures that you end up with are pictures where the ego got distracted and stepped aside and the soul was just revealed. What are some ways that you can kind of massage the ego aside so that the soul can play?
Massaging the ego. It's a nice image. You know, well, as I was mentioning, humor seems to be one of the greatest elements for humor / joy, because you think of a young child and you think of them playing, and they're just in flight. You know, they're not thinking about what they look like or and what they've got to do next. You know, they're just playing. They're in the moment. They're having fun. They're being in joy. And I believe that all of us, I really believe that is the truth and the nature of our core, of each one of us, that childlike joy and play. And so when I learned years ago, when I learned that I could be that and I could do that with people, it was very liberating, because when I initially started doing portraits of people, I was a little concerned and just a little self-conscious, thinking, well, how am I going to get people to be relaxed or to really take a good picture, what, you know, quote, good picture. And and over time I learned and I realized that it's not about trying, it's not about having a good joke, you know, it's about showing up and being real and being authentic and allowing my joy, my playfulness, my kid to come out and play. So that's so I love it. I mean, it's become something that is every time that I am with somebody, and some people actually don't necessarily initially respond to being playful, or so I have to bring them into that a little bit because they don't really know me, and you know, and it might be a little too much too soon, so I might start with something else that's a little more calming and speaking more softly and calmly and meditative and breath work and you know, things of that nature. But I think part of it also is just being intuitive to where each person's at and their needs and what they're receptive to, but always from a place of honor, of deep honoring the individual. So, but play seems to be one of the greatest, most effective ways, because when I'm playful and silly, then it just allows people to let their guard down, because they see, well, this guy's, you know, totally being completely silly and you know, off the wall. So, you know, and then they could be laughing at me. It's like sometimes people are just laughing at me. And that's fine, because in that moment of when you're just laughing, laughter, joy, seeing a comedy, even, you know, all of that, you are in those moments, you're not thinking about yourself. So
isn't
to answer your question,
isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I think it is. That may be one of the best tricks, not just for a good photo shoot or for a good photograph, but for life. Like when the ego is really just on you like a spider monkey, and it's like, how do I get this thing off me? It's humor. It is those things that's true. It's hard to be laughing, genuinely laughing, and be self-conscious and full of ego.
Full of ego, depression. If you're depressed, if you have judgments about yourself or somebody else, if you're laughing full out or just finding something very joyful, you know, then it's very hard to be in that place of judgment and
with
the ego.
Oh, God. It does feel like such a slippery slope that you walk, because you photograph so many huge icons, and you've got Elton John and the Dalai Lama, Marianne Williamson, Paul McCartney, Deepak Chopra, George Harrison, Michael Beckwith, and many, many others, Ram Dass, Joe Dispenza, Kenny Loggins, Cynthia James, your beautiful wife, and others. And it's almost like the big icons, if somebody has really got a presence and a platform, they want to look good. There's a lot invested in that photo shoot turning out well. And yet, in order for it to be great, you got to let it all go. It's just such a great metaphor for life.
Yeah, it's a paradox in a way. But I think that's the paradox of life in general, is that we, you know, in our Western culture, we're so geared, trained to think that we need to be in control in order to have things work out and have things be successful. And it's so much the opposite, when we're in the place of let go and release and just listening and opening and being guided, and it's the trust to let go and open to the inner guidance, and whether it's certainly, as you say, it goes far beyond a photo session, which is really what the book's about. It starts using the premise of having your picture taken, but that's just the sort of the metaphor for every moment's choice point in our lives, and I keep paralleling it back to that because it's such a great barometer. When you're in front of a camera, it's just such a great reflection and barometer on where is your attention, where are your thoughts at in that moment, which is really where are your thoughts in every moment of your life.
It's so true. And if you want to, you can start over again. And it's what the bottom line to me is, this does feel like it's a conversation about how how to dance humanly as a divine being, living humanly, grappling with an ego, and yet wanting to have a more soulful spiritual experience. This is, it's all inside of this frame.
Yes.
And how,
yes,
to, and that we think our ego is going to have us look good and be cool, but it's really the absence of it when we really look good, when we really shine. We're not cool when our ego is plastered on us. We're much cooler when we're not worried about being cool.
Yeah, you know, and I think that also we've been influenced by the media and by advertising and by fashion, you know, which so often in the past, it's changing in some ways. I mean, but it's still quite dominant that, you know, that you'll see images, photographic images, that are putting on a persona rather than who the person really is. And to some degree, I think most people are influenced by that, some people more than others. And so if you grow up and you're looking at all these fashion magazines, or you're looking at MTV, or you're, you know, whatever it is, and you're seeing these, let's just say for women, you're seeing the archetypes of these women, you know, looking a certain way, having to be a certain way, glamour, it's all image, but it's not substance. It's not substance, and it's not real. It's just not real. Go ahead.
No, I just remember hearing Marianne Williamson talk years ago about how we don't, at what we're looking for in other people and in relationships and in anything, isn't so much to be impressed, but to be dazzled by someone.
Mm-hmm.
And like to have our breath taken away by, and what does that is authenticity and like the true soul, the true spirit of somebody. It's not all the outer stuff, even though we can be impressed by that stuff. What we're really wanting is to just be dazzled, and we're not dazzled unless the soul and the spirit is really in the house, really there.
Yeah, and that's a good distinction. That's a really good distinction. And for a good part of the beginning of my career, I kept submitting my work for different projects that were image-oriented, and I rarely got a job, you know, in that genre, you know, and I kept being reminded, it's like, how many times do you need to see the sign? You know, I just kept being told, this is not for you. This is not what you do. This is not your style. You know, and but I kept thinking I had to do it because that's where the money was. You know, that's where the commercial. That's how I could. That's how I could make an income. And you know, so it just required constant listening. You know, always listening.
Right,
okay,
for all of us. We think we're supposed to go down one path, and it's like our soul is leading us. It's like, oh, it can't possibly be that. That comes too naturally. That's too easy. It's too joyous to do it that way. Couldn't possibly.
Yeah, or just the belief that I did, the belief that there wasn't a niche to be found, you know,
right,
commercially, you know, that I could find myself, that I could be successful at. And it did, and it has taken quite a bit of time to sort of continue to trust and carve that out, and to say, no, this is who I am, this is what I stand for, and I'm speaking for anybody, you know, for all of us, that it's that trust, it's that inner trust that to listen to what is your unique gift, what is your unique gift that no one else does quite in the same way. And continuing to honor that and listen and take little steps one at a time and just continue to move forward with taking those steps and believe in that because I, you know, I'm a living example of, you know, it might take its own time, but when we do that, you know, this book is a living reflection of that because it's just, I don't believe that there's anything out there that's quite like this, and I'm not saying that to pitch it. I'm meaning it's such a personal reflection of who I am and my message in a way that I don't believe anyone else has or could do in this way because no one else is me, and I think that's true for all of us.
It's amazing. I just posted on Facebook recently a video that was sent to me virally about this 5-minute video by Alan Watts, And the subject of it, I just posted it in the chat room for those of you who want to check it out, called What If Money Was No Object? And he goes into this amazing rant about, it came from a commencement speech at a major college like Columbia or something, and he said to the graduates, so what would you do if money wasn't an object? And everyone says, well, I'd dance, I'd sing, I'd do art, I'd play, I'd travel, whatever, but come on, let's get real. Money is an object. We need to focus on money. He's like, well, just what if it wasn't? And he is encouraging people to explore these things that they would do just because it's purely joy for them. And he said, if you become good at that, I promise you somebody on the planet will want that gift or that talent that you have and will be willing to pay for it. And because you become an expert in that, they'll probably pay you really well. But if you don't become that thing and you just become an expert at doing the thing that you don't like or that you get by doing, then you're making a living doing something that is taking away your living. But if you find that specific niche that no one else can do like you do, and you will be able to make a living doing that thing. And I feel like you, Carl Studna, are the stud of that. I'm sure you've heard that before. I'm sure.
Yeah, eighth grade gym class it started, I think.
But it's amazing. I mean, because you really have niched, you found this niche that really is passionate, and you are an expert. You are like the top of the food chain in this niche. And I think we all are in the niche that we are if we discover it and we really go for it. And you have, I just want to read from the foreword of the book. I think Reverend Dr. Michael says this so beautifully. I'm just going to set this up. This is the foreword from Carl Studna's new book, Click, Choosing Love One Frame at a Time. And this is the foreword by Michael Bernard Beckwith. I always call him Reverend Michael Beckwith. I know everyone's calling him Michael Bernard Beckwith now. So here it goes. Artistic perceptivity is limitless. And when it's related to photography, angling the camera and pressing the button are secondary to the inner perceptive eye of the photographer. I've known Carl Studna both personally and as a member of my spiritual community, the Agape International Spiritual Center, for 23 years. He's got 3 years up on me. Throughout those years, he's photographed me countless times. When a selection of my photographs is submitted for public relations purposes, Carl's are often the first pick. I've always known the reason why this occurs is beyond the tilt of my head, the smile on my face, the wardrobe choices, or the photo's backdrop. It is Carl's inner perception that creates the space for him to clearly see and capture the essential essence of his subjects. What intuitively resonates at his core being about what he perceives infuses the photographs he takes. Carl's work is best described by the wise observation of another artist, Mies van der Rohe, a pioneer of modern architecture, who said, God is in the details. It's not the devil in the details, it's God in the details. It's the wealth of Carl's inner life, his spiritual practice, that informs his work. His capacity to be present to the freshness, to the awe of the moment, to intuitively connect to his photo's subject, are born of genuinely loving, honoring, and respecting what he sees through the lens of the camera. Click is the result of the wisdom Carl has gathered through his use of the camera as a tool of seeing with the eye of the heart. With every click, he catches the rich textures of humanity's yearnings, aspirations, sorrows, joys, secrets, revelations, and triumphs. Carl's own stories, along with those from a diverse collection of guest authors, will open the eyes, minds, and hearts of readers to discover how the power within each immediate moment invites them into a way of perceiving the preciousness of being a spiritual being having a human incarnation. Michael Bernard Beckwith. Wow.
Yeah, I was very touched to receive that from him.
Yeah, wow. Nice. I want to talk for a second about dreams. First of all, if you're listening to this and you've had a dream, I've had dreams where there's a photo shoot happening in a dream, or there's a movie being filmed in a dream, to me, I always think that those are, if we're not already a lucid dreamer, those are invitations to become lucid in the dream, because we're aware that we're observing something that's happening, and in some way there's a level of objectivity that's present. So it's kind of, to me, it's a trigger to become lucid. And perhaps we can see that as a trigger in our waking life. Whenever there's a photo or a camera present, which is all the time, by the way, so many people have smartphones, and their phones are their cameras are their phones, and vice versa. It's happening a lot. There's so many opportunities now to become lucid. What's your thought on that as a metaphor, the camera being a lucid dream trigger?
Well, you know, I believe that the images that the camera reveals certainly can be a reflection of our inner life. Mm. And there's two photographs in the book that were birthed out of what I call sort of an inner vision photographs.
Ooh. Wow.
And one of them is with Dr. Michael Beckwith, and the other is with Deepak Chopra. And with Michael's, I was in a meditation, and this image came to me of him in prayer from the side, so profile, lit from mainly from the back, so illumined, but the feel, and with a red background, and everything was very vivid as it came through, but it was more the feeling. It was the feeling and the mm-hmm. message that was behind the image that was driving the imagery. Okay, so it all became extremely clear, and I finished my meditation, got on the computer and emailed him and said, "Okay, you're coming out here soon. We must get a portrait of you. I just had an inner vision, and Spirit is calling for this to be brought into form." So because we speak the same language, he got it, and he agreed. And the image that came forward is identical in the inner vision that I saw and in the feeling that it was driving it. It is identical. It completely matches that.
Mm,
and the same
wow.
is true with Deepak Chopra. I mean, identical. So it when that happens, when I have a clear inner vision that's driven by a message and a feeling, the imagery is simply representing a message, okay? And when that happens, it always unfolds identically and turns out, manifests identically to what the inner vision felt and saw. And so I've learned to trust that. And so with Deepak, I did the same thing, except I'm not as close with him, so it took about 3 years for that to happen. But I stayed on it. You know, I just stayed on. I cultivated a relationship with his assistant and was, you know, I explained it well to her, and she got it. And it finally happened, and it was the same thing in that case as well. So I've learned to trust
picture.
That.
Can
yeah,
you say
you.
Something? Because people aren't looking at the picture. I've got the Deepak Chopra picture in front of me.
Yes. Yeah. So,
extraordinary.
So the picture of Deepak, it's with him holding a candle, and in his the palm of his hands are together, and the candle's in the center, and the light is illuminating from his hands, and it's lit in a way where it just has that quality of a pure illumination, and the message that I got that represents the visual was that, oh, Deepak is a messenger of light. Okay, so then the visual imagery came, symbolic imagery came as a reflection of the image, and of the message rather, and it was a very technical shot as far as how it was shot. It was with a very, very slow exposure where he had to be very still, and it required patience on his part, and, you know, I don't think I shot more than 10 shots at most of that particular image, because they took 5 to 10 seconds each of being still. And he was patient for it, and there it was. And so I'm always so grateful and in awe when I am given an image, a message in an image, and then I trust and then just follow through. And
so
and the same was true with
Keep going.
The same was true with Joe Dispenza too, Dr. Joe Dispenza. So shot of him in there as well, and that image came to me also, you know, where he's holding this plastic brain, because his work is all with the power of the mind and the brain. And he tells a great story in the book about catching his thoughts while he's in the midst of the shoot, because he had all these conditioned thoughts of hating having his picture taken as a child, and his brother was always the one that took a good picture, and he always hated it. So his story is all about literally practicing what he talks about and being able to catch his thoughts and make a shift with me, and then empower it, and it really was a tangible shift, because as we write about, the first half hour of shooting, both of us were feeling like this just isn't happening, you know.
Oh my God!
And so it required a shift in consciousness, and him, me shifting as far as listening more fully to what he needed, and him being willing to open and have more trust in me, and then every shot, every moment, he was present from that point forward, and just magical stuff came through.
It's a great shot. It feels like the essence of him, of Joe Dispenza, is right there, and he's centered, his eyes are shining, and I feel like he's sitting right here in the room with me, and yet he's holding this brain in his hands. It's kind of spooky. It's like, I want to hug him. Oh, no, I don't.
And ironically, what lightened him up, you know, was play. We had this plastic brain, and I just had him start to toss the brain to my assistant, so they're playing catch the brain with each other.
Oh, that's hysterical.
And then some of those were some great shots too. Very, very different, obviously. And some of the shots, the brains are in the midair, and he's about to catch one. But that shifted the energy for him, you know, where he was doing something that he enjoyed, you know, just playing around and playing, you know, playing catch with something.
Oh, that's so funny. There's a question in the chat room. Celestial B says, "Is Carl a film shooter or digital shooter now? And how has his work adjusted, or how did his work adjust if he changed from one to the other, or both?" Can you address that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I shoot really all digitally now. It's just, there's just so many advantages to it, and I've finally reached a place technology-wise where in Photoshop or post-production I can get the images to look visually really how I love them. And, yeah, I mean, just... there's just so many advantages. I mean, for nostalgia's sake, occasionally I'll shoot some film and have it processed, and there's still a certain warmth and texture about film that, you know, it's obviously a whole different technology in a way. But I just have fully embraced the art of digital and everything that it offers, and including instant feedback, you know, where the art of being a photographer has shifted in a way, because you lose now, with digital shooting, you lose trusting your intuition in a way, because when you were shooting film, you would shoot and intuit when you got a good shot here. This felt like it was a very present shot where they, you know, and you'd intuit it and end up shooting probably 3-4 times as much, because you just want to make sure that, for insurance sake, that you got a number of present, connected, really, really great shots. But now, you know, you just look at it right away, and then you can, and even on the viewfinder, you can blow it up large to look at even details. So you lose the intuition in that sense now, but it also makes it a lot easier because you can, you do, and more of a relief in a way, because you just see it right away. And
right.
And I can be doing a session with someone and look at, you know, a series of shots and go, oh, this one's fantastic. I know this one's great already. And then feel more confident about moving on to another location or another, you know, slightly different setup. And so I love it. There's so many things about digital shooting now that I just love.
Oh, that's so great. So I am going to make a few quick announcements, and when I come back from making these announcements, I want to talk about the picture that you took of the Dalai Lama. I want to know about that. And you also have Ram Dass in here and Kenny Loggins. I want to hear you talk about what that was like to be up close and personal with these amazing men. But the Dalai Lama. Actually, let's make sure everyone knows your website. Is the best website for everyone to go to, is it carlstudna.com?
Yeah, they can either go to my name, carlstudna.com, S-T-U-D-N-A.com, or if they want to go directly to seeing more about the book, they can go to clickchoosinglove.com.
Clickchoosinglove.com. Okay, I'm going to post that in the chat room. clickchoosinglove.com. Okay. And carlstedna.com is the other one. Awesome. Okay. So I just want everyone. Oh, and what? How can people connect with you? I mean, are you available to shoot? Do you workshops? Are you?
I do it all. And especially
are you teaching people how to do this kind of a thing? If somebody's interested
in
research,
yes, people? I don't have a formal, but I am. I've got with the launching of Click, which just launched last month. It's really launched a whole broader career for me in doing more workshops, expanded workshops. I've been doing a workshop called Revealing the Sacred for years, which involves people that are just, you know, it's a photography related one, but I've expanded, and I'm offering a workshop now that is along the lines of the teachings of the book, Click Choosing Love. And so I've just formed a workshop for that, and I'll be offering that more, and that'll be posted on my site as I start having locations where I'm going to be offering that. And I'm just getting out more and offering that to different communities and locations and people, and also presentations, speaking more, and always doing shoots. People say, well, are you still shooting? I'll be shooting until I can't pick up a camera anymore.
Wow. And please come to LA soon so we can do something, because I'm overdue.
Yeah.
For a Carlstedna shoot. My God.
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay, so let me let people know what's next.
So how they can contact, if they go to my website, there's a contact number there. It's at info@carlstedna.com, or more directly, carl@carlstedna.com.
Okay, so I've got info@carlstedna.com, and what was the other one?
Carl@carlstedna.com. It's probably way too much information for people. But
so if anyone's listening and you've got the need for a photo, I mean, everybody needs one for Facebook or for your business or for your upcoming book or for anything that you're doing. You want to have your soul be captured, and not just anybody knows how to do that. You got to see if you can find Carl. You live in Denver, right? You're in Colorado.
I live in the mountains outside of Denver. Yeah, I finally made the move 9 years ago with Cynthia up to the mountains outside of Denver, and
magical.
Took a leap of faith and trusted that I could live where I want to live, and because we're on a 12-acre horse property, and it's just magnificent. And trust that could happen, and travel places. So always finding a balance for being able to travel and do shoots and workshops and lectures and live in this little oasis here, which really is so peaceful and beautiful.
How divine. Okay, so let me just let people know about what's coming up next on the Awakening Zone. We've got Bright Light at 7 p.m. Central Time with Dee Wallace. Inner Speak Soul Adventures on Tuesday at 7 p.m. with Jean Adrian. and the Dr. Elizabeth Show on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central Time with Dr. Elizabeth Lambert. Next on my show, next Monday, it's all about you and your dreams, Dream Interpretation Monday. So that's next week. So make sure you pay attention to your dreams. Keep note of them. Keep track of them. Go to dreamscloud.com and download your free dream app so you can really magically record your dreams and keep track of them, give them a title, get a free dream reflection from professionals from the International Association for the Study of Dreams. It's an unbelievable app. It's really the best dream app on the planet, and I would know because I've had them all, and this is the best one, and it's free. I sound like the guy that does those mattress commercials, and it's free. Anyway, dreamscloud.com. Record your dreams and bring them to me next week. I also want to invite you all to check out Joan Gelfand's work. Her book is called A Dreamer's Guide to Cities and Streams. She's one that uses her dreams to inspire her poetry, and she's been published in so many different magazines and articles and books galore. And so remember, your dreams and your dreaming mind and the visions that come, like Carl talked about, the visions that came from his dreaming mind can truly inspire not just wonderful creativity for creativity's sake, but great work that can be published, that can be part of your career, that can lead you toward finding your niche if you haven't already found it. And then once you've found your specific niche that is that passionate sweet spot, D spot for your life's messages and work, then, you know, you can make a living doing those things. And then beyond that, contribute greatly to humanity. So let your dreams fund that. And check out Joan Gelfand's work. Let that inspire you. The Dreamer's Guide to Cities and Streams. I also want to remind you to check out the Awakening Zone store. You can go to the top of any Awakening Zone page and click on the store button. You can find wonderful products like Tuning In Again Volume 1, Tuning In Again Volume 2, and also there's ringtones and hats and all kinds of things, Awakening Zone. And every time you purchase anything from the Awakening Zone store, it helps us to be able to continue to make these recordings and these live shows available to you around the world for free. You can also go to my website. I've got the new thing that's coming up for me that I'm so excited about. There's several things, actually. The big thing is my Dream Life Coach Training that starts in January. So if you go to dreamlifecoachtraining.com, check that out. It'll be a certification program that I'm leading. It's a year-long course, and you'll spend an hour a week with me via teleclass, and I'll be teaching you the ways, the ins and outs, and ups and downs and roundabouts about how to become a dream life coach and how you can add that to what you're already doing or how that might call to you as a profession. You never know. It's not just about being a life coach. It's not just about interpreting dreams, but it's about blending empowerment and spirituality and dream work and soul work all into one modality that gives you the ability to truly empower other people. And, of course, while you're empowering other people and helping them to awaken, you can't help but get some of that good stuff on yourself. So it's an amazing, amazing thing, and I'd love to share it with you if it calls to you, dreamlifecoachtraining.com. And there's lots of other things to check out on ihadthestrangestdream.com. And make sure you go to my Facebook page so you can find out about some of the up-to-date things that are going on with me. Okay, last thing. This is the last thing, I promise. LA Times, if you go to latimes.com, I don't know what to search exactly, but if you put in Franklin High School, I did an event at Franklin High School last week for the Dream Project, my nonprofit organization, and it's featured in the LA Times in the Sunday edition yesterday. So exciting. These kids, inner city kids, using their dreaming minds to come up with the most incredible solutions to assist the United Nations and the United Nations Millennium Development Goals in changing the world. And they focused this project on recycling, and they did the third annual eco-friendly fashion show. They called it Hot and Bothered because it's all about creating fashion to help cool down the planet, but the fashion was made out of all recycled stuff, trash and newspapers and garbage bags, the most unbelievable high-class fashion at this eco show. So you got to just, if you go to latimes.com and search for probably eco-friendly fashion show or Franklin High School, you'll see an article, and I'm in it, and the Dream Project's in it. So there you go. Use your dreaming mind. It's amazing the things that will come from that. So speaking of that, Carl Sedna, tell us about what it was like filming or photographing the Dalai Lama.
Well, it continues to be one of the most enriching experiences of my life. That was in 1999, and it was I was invited by Dr. Michael Beckwith to be a part of the Synthesis Dialogues in Dharamsala, India, which is where the Dalai Lama lives, and record those 5 days with him, where all these visionaries from around the world. No, it was film.
Stills. Oh my God!
Stills.
Incredible.
They had a video crew there as well, and so cut to the chase. The first day, he's walking up the path to the Norbolinka Institute, which is a Tibetan institute, and I find the perfect spot to greet him and to photograph him while he's coming up the path. And I've got my camera out, and I'm looking at him because he's coming up the path, and I really wanted to acknowledge him before I took the pictures. And I'm looking at him, and he sees me, and he veers off the path, and he comes up to me, and with his hand out in prayer, and he says, "Hello." And in the most beautiful open recognition, like he was greeting a long lost friend, and that's what it felt like. And somehow I managed to both take a picture of that moment and greet him back. And the whole 5 days was just such a profound reflection of his beauty and his constant presence. Presence. I mean, every single person that asked him a question, he was so present with, more than anyone I've ever seen. The only time he would turn away would be to ask his interpreter something. But other than that, you just watched him being with people, and he was so 100% right there with no distractions. And I've never witnessed anyone like that before, and I don't think I ever have since then. So that provided an imprint for me of, you know, this way of being is possible, and so it was just so enriching on so many different levels, and so the photograph that's in the book really shows that moment of connection. And then there was another brief moment where I'm up on the second story of the temple, and they're taking a break, and he looks up and sees me up there photographing with this long lens, and he looks up and points at me and starts laughing like, "Oh, there you are."
My long lost friend.
Yeah, there you are. So play, you know, comes back to play, Kelly.
I think it just becomes so simple, all this spiritual seeking and all of the things that we go through to twist ourselves in a knot. Really, maybe we just need to not tie ourselves in knots and just play.
Yeah. Well, and he was seamless. One more quick thing I want to say about him was that he was seamless in how he would naturally shift from childlike play to the next moment if someone asked him a more poignant, quote, serious question. Then he'd be in that place of complete presence and wisdom and centeredness of absolute, you know, wisest sage, you know.
My
and it could
God.
Switch in the next moment back to cracking up and being completely playful because it can be that seamless.
And it's not like, I mean, what to me, I feel like we can just take a moment here and go into the Dalai Lama. And I, you know, when I see certain people that are just happy-go-lucky and all of that, a lot of them, some of them, most of them, it's part of it. It's because they haven't been through something difficult. A lot of times people have that, and then somehow their spirit gets smashed or crushed, and then it takes that light away from them. But this man, I mean, his country was taken away from him. I mean, he has witnessed such atrocities. I mean, his monks, so many of them have been killed by, I mean, Tibet has been just decimated.
Well,
yeah,
it's not recognized as a country, and he's still a fugitive. And and a side note, I know we've got to end soon. A side note, my book was going to be published, printed in China. Hay House had a Chinese printer, and they got back to Hay House and said, no, we can't print it because there's a story and a picture of the Dalai Lama in there.
So, just
as a side note, it's still so prevalent that he's an outlaw there.
It's amazing that he is the outlaw when they come in and destroy. I mean, it's just, talk about cognitive dissonance to the max. And yet, he does not have a heavy heart. He does not, I mean, and he is as light as it gets to me. He's truly an example. I mean, there's so many great stories and great pictures in Carl Studna's book, Click, but get the book just for this picture of the Dalai Lama. You see his joy. Even if that's it, just to meditate on that, put it next to your bed, go to sleep with that, with this page open, I guarantee it'll influence you. Just looking at him, I feel my heart is softening. I feel like I want to just cry 1,000 tears because I want to match that vibration. I want to be that. I want to let every part of me that feels like, oh, I can't be that because of X, Y, and Z. It's like, oh, no, if the Dalai Lama can be that joyous, that playful, that present, then none of us have any excuse not to be. Wow. And you captured that moment. And it, talk about it jumping off the page. I mean, I feel like he truly not just in the room, but he's in my body. I look at this picture.
Yeah, and I do believe that's part of the power and the effectiveness of a still imagery because it's so unique in that way, you know, so unique from moving film or video is that every moment, just as what the premise of the book is, every moment, every frame is that essential choice on where's our attention and are we fully open and present and projecting and emitting the fullness of our soul, of our essence, of our light, of our love, or are we holding back,
saving
contracted
it for something.
In some way?
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, one last bit, this picture of Elton John in your picture, talk about the soul being like to the max. We're going from the Dalai Lama to Elton John. That might seem like a strange segue, but maybe not. What was it like taking this outrageous picture of Elton John in one of his fabulous ensembles? Looks like he's in Vegas or something. Where is
it? It is Vegas. It was his show, The Red Piano, which was a very extravagant, visually extravagant show. Oh. And I love that shot because it just, you know, it is such a dynamic picture of, that is like an iconic shot, you know, the shot
that's
in there.
Yeah.
And they used that a lot. I mean, his management, and they've used it a lot for, because it's iconic, but it also shows light and presence and joy and a strong vibrancy about it.
Yeah. You can hear him singing in this picture. It's really incredible. So, Carl Studna, thank you so much for joining us on the D-Spot. Thank you for sharing your love, your light, your expertise, and all the spiritual teachings that go into this art form that you've developed, you've created.
Thank you, Kelly. And I just want to let everybody know, remind everybody that the medium of photography and having your picture taken really can shift for you, because at least 85% of people hate having the picture taken. It really has the opportunity to shift to a tool for awakening and for opening and allowing the truth in your presence to shine.
Ah. So remember that it's not just the fear of snakes that most people have or the fear of falling.
Public speaking, yeah.
The fear of, gosh, that's true. There's a lot. I mean, I guess it's the non-Leos of the world. Leos like me are like, what? What's the big deal?
Yeah, you're in the minority. You're pretty rare.
But it is, so, but there's something that's really, it makes my hands just got sweaty all of a sudden thinking about it. Just taking a picture that's naked, like naked of the ego, that is confronting. It's scary, but wow, I think it could be addicting. And then once we got used to that, why would we want to go back to putting on the, you know, all the cloaks of the ego and cluttering up the lens with all that stuff when we could just be ourselves? So I have just thoroughly enjoyed this. The time has just flown by. Carl Studna, I love you. I appreciate
you. I love
you
too, Kelly.
I thank God
for you.
You.
I appreciate
really
all that
wait.
You're doing in the world too.
Thank you so much. And I am looking forward to being photographed by you at the next opportunity we have, and seeing you around campus at Agape one of these days. That would be so, so, so divine. So everyone, make sure you go to carlstudna.com or clickchoosinglove.com and get your copy and many other people's copies. It's the holidays, so get a bunch of copies for your friends, your families, your loved ones, especially anyone.
I'm waking,
That was the wrong one. Sorry, just lead us out a little more gently. Excuse me, I just got excited. Buy them for all your friends and get clicks for yourself as well. So I am Dr. Dream. I'll see you next week. Make sure you remember your dreams. Bring them next week, and I hope you're enjoying your holidays. Slow down, breathe, take it one click at a time. And
you have been listening to an Awakening Zone presentation, Human Empowerment Radio and Media for the 21st Century and Beyond.